The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
It is cut down day.
It is.
And there's already been a lot of moves made.
Well, I wasn't able to cut everyone I wanted to. I have cut a lot of you.
I hadn't heard of many of the guys the Bears actually announced that they waived. Had you heard of Jerome Carvin?
Schmarvin Vinden?
Schmarvin Noy! Michael Dwumfor?
Lee Oz Maxwell Jillian. East Carolina University.
They've also waived wide receiver Peter LeBlanc, also known as Pete the White, or of the White.
Wendell is cut. Rudy is cut. Janie, you're gone.
Defensive lineman Jalen Hutchings, cut. Wide receiver John Jackson, cut. And linebacker Javon White, cut.
Steven, I like your hustle. That's why it was so hard to cut you.
This is really sad.
A quick note, Brett Rippon has been cut. I imagine they will attempt to re-sign him to the practice squad.
This is very Castellanos of you.
Sorry.
As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again.
Congratulations. The rest of you made the team. Except you, you, and you.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hello, goodbye. You got to listen hard. You got to listen with intensity and alacrity today because we are leading you up to Cubs baseball, the now competitive, very serious Cubs pennant race will resume against the rocket arm of Paul Skeens in Pittsburgh in about an hour.
That's our third segment of the show.
Yes, but that's not why you tuned in today at the moment, right? Because the Bears are cutting people. The Bears have a roster that's coming together. The Bears don't have a long snapper at the moment. And they've got a lot of defensive linemen. And today, the practice squad forms.
That's not the opening segment today either.
No, because that's the second segment.
Right.
Let me quick proppers. Diaz, Studzinski, Fryer, O'Donnell, Lapka, things.
Would you like to give away your credit card number, perhaps Social Security?
Broadcasting live in the Hyundai studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And also right now, callers 6, 7, 8, and 9, right now, to the Scores contest line, 312-540-0670. Every one of those callers wins a pair of tickets to see us, our live show at Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville, 10 to 2, Tuesday, September 17th. We're joined by Justin Steele.
Ticket figures.
It's brought to you by Bosch Power Tools and Philip Chevrolet.
Very much looking forward to those.
I got the memo. I'm on board.
The ticket winners or the chicken strips?
Yes.
All of them. Yes.
Okay. Hard Knocks last night. We're now to 4 out of 5 episodes.
Episodes 3 and 4 were good.
I thought last night was the first good one.
I'm a Phantom Menace girl myself. Really,
Episode 1?
Rogue One is my favorite. Okay?
That was on last night.
Rogue One is my favorite.
I watched Rogue One last night.
Completely understand why Rogue One would be your favorite.
It's more realistic, and I know there's nothing really realistic about it all, but you know what I'm saying. Okay, Ray, I have a request. Can we get Jennifer King added to the list?
Yeah, I thought that she was one of the stars of last night's episode. Very interesting, and obviously, like, her story is pretty great, and the way that she coaches those guys, I think, is pretty cool. So hopefully this is one of those things where maybe someone else is even, or the Bears themselves are like, this is not just someone who's here for a year or whatever, that they think long-term this is someone who can move up on the offensive side of the ball.
I really enjoy just the dynamic between her and Chad Morton, the running backs coach, when it came to just how they were dealing with players and addressing them, and Ian Wheeler and trying to get the best out of him and figuring out a way. But to me, the best advice came from Khalil Herbert. Did you guys notice that?
Meaning what?
When Herbert talked about sometimes you have to send a message and you got to run downhill by like pushing the first person you see, and then the coaches got fired up. Shout out to Khalil Herbert. I thought that was great.
See, I thought the best advice was from Jennifer King.
Which part? Was it, you can't help the team in the tub?
Well, make no. The club in the okay. tub.
Yes, there it was.
I mean,
thank
yes,
you.
But the part where she said running upright is self-correcting.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you're going to learn today. If you keep running upright, you will learn to not run upright.
Why do you think I talk about pad level all the time? Mm-hmm. especially when it comes to a certain wide receiver who has now been made running back. Again, that pad level will bite you at some point or another, especially when it comes to, I don't know, maybe ball security.
Are you going to stop your bitching now?
Nope.
About what?
Well, Hard Knocks. They gave you exactly what you wanted in the first 2 minutes of the episode.
They almost gave me a checklist of the shots that I one more thing. If I'm being greedy, first of all, get that roaring ogre Travis Bagent off my television.
I don't know why you don't.
He's made for this stuff.
It's fine.
It's perfect.
That was great.
The contrast
What's wrong with that?
That was an illustration and contrast. That was a brilliant juxtaposition of scenes.
The television of that was awesome.
That was perfect.
With the singing bowls.
I loved those. I like singing bowls.
Yeah, but Layla's 100% right. The idea of the manifestation of masculinity and rage, and then the solitude of wanting to center oneself and peace. I thought that was really good, filmmaking.
Also, didn't you feel for Tyson Bagent there when he's the one being chill, going to support his dad, who's clearly the show?
He's embarrassed, obviously.
I don't know that he's embarrassed.
Look at that. How could anybody be like, oh, my God.
No, I think they peacefully
How could anyone be proud of their father for being a world champion?
I thought that was great.
Screaming and everything. If you want, seriously, I would pay. I would pay for an app if there's a monthly fee and every day you wake up and it's just Travis Bagent having something else thrown at him.
I don't know why.
Like a pie. It's just you start your day with that.
If later on we find out that there's some bad stuff about Travis Bagent, so be it. But to me, I don't have any problem with them taking 4 minutes out of it to do an event that was clearly planned.
Of course it was.
I'm fine with it.
I lean into the meatball lifestyle. You know that, whether it's watching sports or being a meatball in life. And I feel like Travis Bagent does a little bit of that. But here's the thing. In reality television especially, or whatever we're calling this, I don't want to say documentary because that's just not the truth. You need volunteers, not hostages. He's a willing volunteer and he's entertaining. You don't watch a lot of reality TV, so I think, that's part of the issue.
And if Tyson can help his dad make some money too, I'm here for it. As long as we find out some stuff later on, if he's in a militia leader or something like that.
Yeah, but then it's a different discussion.
Let the record show you said that.
No, but that's the point. If there are major character issues there, then obviously we're reassessing this. But to me, it's fun, mindless TV, and I thought the contrast was pretty great.
He seems like a fun-loving dude that enjoys the spotlight, and I'm okay with that.
He also makes Tyson Bagent make more sense.
If the series ends with him walking out of a bar and into an open sewer, that it's a perfect show.
I don't think that's how this series is going to end.
That would just be ideal.
I don't know.
I think it
takes all kinds, and I figured that was the concept behind that whole discussion, or at least illustration.
And it's probably cool for Tyson that he can walk into a place and just be. I'm gonna be over here.
I think he can do that anywhere, Kate.
But I thought it was cute that he went to support his dad.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the guy's faces got so red. I was thoroughly entertained by it. I was laughing. Who
is the other guy?
Exactly. Every man in your heart. I think he owned a bar in Kansas City.
Okay.
That was my understanding, right?
But is he a ranked arm wrestle guy?
I don't know. He's pretty good.
I don't know.
I mean, he might be discovered now.
Wrapping their head. They did use the over-the-top music, though. That was kind of cool.
I think it all illustrates when you can actually use truth to illustrate things that are that madcap. I enjoy it. That was my whole take. And, I know that wasn't the most moving thing for you, Dan. It was the story about Ian Wheeler. And what's brilliant is you knew the end and it still got you.
No, it's that the parent and the kid after a game. And there's no worse feeling in the world than when your kid is unhappy. It's the worst. You're only as happy as your least happy kid. And just seeing that and the lingering hug and that he needed his mom and the mom needed to be there for her son. And it was, that got me. That was unexpected. And there was so much truth in that, that it was, and that they kept at that shot too. They didn't cut away. And it made it, I thought that was really powerful.
Yes, because that was the way that you connected to it.
That's what I said.
But see, this is the thing sometimes with you, Dan. You don't understand that other people connect to other parts of it.
They can. If they want to connect to Travis Bajan, good luck to you. I'm not going to go near you.
I just don't necessarily know that I was connecting as far away from you as possible. I was just
connecting.
I appreciated the TV part of what it was.
It's a cartoon character screaming.
I'm not even talking about that.
Okay.
So it's going to be one of those days. Got it. No. Okay.
We got one hot hour where the White Sox are lucky that I spared them from Zapruder film trying to figure out Gear Crochet before the game.
I enjoyed Rome going to the grocery store, too.
What grocery store Woodman's. Was that?
It was Woodman's.
I had no idea. I spent a good several minutes trying to figure it out.
I was trying to figure out what that sign was that said, like, Shalom Cake or something. There was some sign, and I didn't understand. It looked like, I don't know if there was like a kosher section or something, and they cut away from it. Like, wait, what was that? What was that? It was like some sort of like kosher bakery in there? I don't know where that Woodman's is.
I don't know.
I don't know the answers to anything out there.
I thought it was great, like, just seeing him be like, get distracted. Because that's what we all do when we go down. We have a mission and we're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go in for some light bulbs and some batteries. And you're like, oh, look at that. They have all sorts of different types of seeds.
$200 later.
Exactly.
And the funniest line was Roman would be like, these are snacks for professional athletes. He's like, it basically looks like something you would bring a kindergarten class. And he made the point that it's like, this is for professional athletes.
I also really enjoy the offensive line room, the glimpse that we got to see with the Clorox wipes instead of the dude wipes.
And we saw Ryan Bates. He exists. He's there. So that, I mean, we know he's there. He's not on IR, right? He's not on PUP. He exists. So I hope he's healthy.
Man, I do too, because waving to Tyree Carter and putting Larry Borum on the injured reserve list, what do you think the first thing I thought about was? Offensive line depth. Wasn't even close. My very first impression. These things make me nervous.
Everybody's arguing over which Woodman's it is. Some are saying it's the Deerfield Woodman's at Milwaukee and Deerfield Parkway. Others says that is the Woodman's in Vernon Hills.
Guys, it looked like there were some pretty good deals to be had there.
Well, I mean, the one in Vernon Hills is, you know, 5 minutes from where they practice, so that would make sense.
Like, some stuff was really cheap.
Just head straight downtown Line Road.
I got questions about the prices. Those look pretty good.
Yeah, I'd go shopping with Rome.
You can't get those in the city.
Can't get what?
Those prices.
Oh. Well, you can. You just got to know where to go.
I didn't know where to go.
I got some snacks for the flight last week.
Oh, your bodega.
Hell yeah. Two for a dollar.
See, that's what I need.
You need a good corner store.
There's one down here.
Yeah.
On the Pedway.
Yeah, there's one.
Yeah, there's a lot of things on the Pedway. Those people who try to convert you.
Yeah, I mean, the entire Pedway smells like a beer fart.
Yeah, but even,
other than that.
But even if you go the like other way on the Pedway, like towards the Starbucks, like this way, not that way.
See, the problem
is a good little corner store there, and then the Soprafina. And
when I started here, none of this was open. When I started here 5 days a week, so I didn't know. You know, everything was closed like a ghost town. Like, it was dead inside under there. So now I got to go exploring one day and figure this all out.
Yeah.
So for me, Hard Knocks, like Jennifer King, I thought was awesome. I have naturally, I'm just curious about her career because of how she got to the Bears and what she means. And I just thought it was really great to see her. I appreciate watching how she coaches and just listening to her. And I thought that the dichotomy of her and Chad Morton was really fun. To get that kind of like level of position coaching too, where you actually get to the details, was really fun for me to watch and observe and just see how they wanted to motivate Ian Wheeler, for example, and to see his teammates lift him up. I thought all that was great.
I'm enjoying the text argument about the Woodmans. People are talking about the same Woodmans. They're confused as to whether Milwaukee and Deerfield is Buffalo Grove or Vernon Hills. Everyone says it's Buffalo Grove. There's only one Woodmans up there.
Is it the same and they just don't know what zip code it's in
Correct.
Or something?
Correct.
Hell yeah.
It's amazing how people who know so much have such a difficult time determining what it is they're seeing. Incredible, right?
Yeah, you can't help the club from the tub is what I wrote down on my notes. But either way, you know what I always thought of then was the song I Want to Make Love in the Club, and then they rhyme and it got all confused in my head.
When we come back, we are going to take a look at the initial 53-person Bears roster on the score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
All right, boys, you know what time it is. It's victory. What we've been waiting for. Hey, we talk about legendary teams. Listen to me. Listen to this right here. We talk about the Patriots, bro. We talk about the Legion of Boom. We talk about the 85 Bears. They're going to talk about the 24 preseason Bears.
That's from Hard Knocks. I loved that.
Okay, the preseason Bears.
Wasn't that Brett Rippin? I think it was.
Austin Reed.
Oh, it was Austin Reed? Oh, guys, there was this really cute scene where Austin Reed was walking into that game.
Oh, and he said to Shane Waldron?
Hello?
Did you see what he said to Shane Waldron? I'm sorry for stepping on
that. No, you're right. It was really wholesome.
He said, what is he? Thank you for dedicating your time to helping me, regardless of what happens. And Waldron's like, yeah, whatever. He just totally blew him off.
He's in game mode.
I know he was, but it still seemed like it was very, very nice of Austin Reed to say that. He knew he's getting cut, and he says that to his coach. His coach's like,
I enjoyed him trying to be like, no, I'm for real taking that ball. Like, I'm get that spatted up and I'm taking that ball, that touchdown ball. Good for him.
Between that and the karaoke, I feel like he's very likable.
Painted is, I think, what they call it, or paneled.
Paneled? I like spat it up, though. That's interesting.
Paneled.
So they kept more D linemen than I thought they would. That looks like they've some of the O linemen. Interesting. It makes the waiver of Jatari Carter stand out a little bit more with some of the guys that they kept, because that was a draft pick.
Maybe it's just because I'm so used to seeing him, but I feel like he's gotten significant playing time for the last three seasons, Carter. Like he's been dependable as a backup for what they needed. And again, you better hope you're rolling with those dudes and they're going to be there for you, because that guy has been there for you. And to see him get waived, I wouldn't be surprised if another team picked him up today at all.
I wouldn't be surprised either, because I think that he has positional flexibility, which is something that a lot of teams like, where you can say he's a tackle, he's a guard, and you can move him around a little bit. We had a big discussion yesterday about depth on both lines of scrimmage for the Bears, and I'm uncomfortable with their belief in their depth. And I think they are too. I think that's why they made so many moves. I mean, it was weird. That is something that I thought was strange. Last night, there was no mention of that.
Also,
that on the defensive line, you went out and made significant moves over the last 4 days.
You're absolutely correct. Like, regardless of how you look at it, those were very deliberate actions taken where you indicate that you didn't have what you needed. And we knew that. We knew that was a possibility. Also, Zach Pickens, I just need to know if he's okay. That's a roll call that we haven't gotten this preseason.
And are we okay with a little bit of long snapper question at this point?
I am with you on this. Like, I thought Studs was a little cavalier about it in the meeting today. Not having a long snapper and not having the work between long snapper, new holder, and kicker, it makes me uncomfortable.
Well, let me clarify.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
Let me clarify. So I understand at this moment not having one on the roster, of course, is a concern. I'm saying of the rankings of concerns that we're going to have if you're ranking the least concerning things about the roster, it's in the top five, long snapper, because it's replaceable.
But here's my...
Even with bad snapping in the preseason, they got through it and didn't miss a kick in a game.
In the preseason.
I know, I understand, but the execution of the snap and the hold and the kick is exactly the same in the preseason.
I just want to offer this.
And one more point. I think they can find a competent long snapper and be just fine. If they lose a game, if they lose to the Titans because of a bad snap, I will eat my words.
Okay. But that's my point, is I think they very well could. We saw the center position absolutely fail the quarterback last season. I think that extends to long snapper. They told you in the draft that they decided that hidden yards really mattered to them when they spent a fourth round pick on a punter. So get it right. Either you care about this or you don't. You either care about special teams or you don't. So which one is it?
If it were, I had the pleasure of covering Manly Maynard Gold. If you're telling me that two pieces of the mechanism are fine, I have less of a problem. And I don't know about Tory Taylor yet in that role. That to me is the concern. When you've got two of the three guys that have worked together for a long time, It feels less like a problem. But when you're saying, okay, new guy that we're asking to hold, here's a new guy that you're going to take the snaps from, I could see how it could go sideways on you pretty quick.
The posterior chain of the special teams mechanism seems like it could be a little out of whack.
I don't want to go all old guy here, but I was on the beat in 1997, the 4-12 year. And they had a long snapper named Harper LaBelle, who was okay unless he wasn't okay.
Gitchy, gitchy, yeah, da.
Not Patty. He had some issues. He had some bad days where they lost. I can't tell you which. I think it was a Packer game. They lost because of a bad Harper LaBelle snap. And in the preseason, I want to say they had a guy named Ron Davis. They went through three different guys. There was always something janky about it. Always, whether it was Todd Sauerbrunn having to pull a punt off the tops of his toes, or whether it was having to reach on a hold for a Jeff Jaeger kick, it was all year. And the next offseason, the next draft, they drafted Patrick Manley. And that was it for the next giant chunk of my
for the next existence. 16 years.
That the next was 16
a,
years.
That but was that a was rebound a, decision that worked.
But that's seriously like somebody there said, we're not living through this again.
And I do think that Studs is right, that you can probably find replacement level long snapper more easily
now
than any other position.
Now you can. It's in large part because of Patrick Manley. All long snapping is better now.
Yes, but it's still, hey, let's make this work between a couple of new guys at the position. I don't want something like that to be the difference between the Bears being an 8-win team and them being a 9-win team. If we're talking about like holding them to playoff expectations, I don't want us to have to go back and be like, you know, they were right there. If it weren't for that game in Houston where, you know, the ball goes over the punter's head and they give up a safety, like that, that's the stuff that I don't want to see happen.
And you know what? You bring up such a good point, because the margins will determine, to me, just some absolute success in that first, what, six games versus what could, like, this is the stuff where we're thinking about it, I think, with the appropriate level of concern. When you consider the opportunity that lies ahead of them in this first set of games. Additionally, I can't believe I'm still harping on this, but partially just for clarification. So Borum gets put on the injured designated to return list. So they must think Amagaji's healthy and ready to go, correct? Was that not an option for him?
He kind of has to be.
But was that not an option for him? Because that was my question to you guys in Vegas. You know, that was pre-Mantis. Mantis.
As we really think of everything as either pre or post Mantis.
As we should. Yeah. I feel like that's a fair designation.
Yeah, I think they looked at it as, we're going to use the time between the final preseason week and opening day as 3 weeks of ramp up for him to be ready to be a swing player for us.
Yeah, but the investment there, the leap of faith that he's good. It's a rookie from Yale.
Yes.
Bears meatball, too.
I understand if you're talking about a vested vet who is, you know, you're pulling one of those, I forgot who it was the last couple of years. Usually you've got a guy over there.
Ja'Tyre Carter or Larry Borum?
Yeah, maybe Larry Borum will grow into one of those guys, but just sometimes you get a dude who you know can get you through a game, maybe can get you through a couple games. I don't know that Kieran Amagaje is that.
At all. We're going to find out. And that's, these are the reasons we're asking these details is, yes, it was hard to make the team. But they still made some decisions where you're asking, what was the calculus that went into it? Valus, obviously. I'm going to say that. Prove me wrong then, dude. I would love to be proven wrong on this. And we're still trying to figure out what his value is when the kickoff rule is being discussed in a way that makes you think that it's not going to be applied the way that they wanted it to be.
That's a bit of the shame of the Wheeler thing of going, man, if he were healthy, does he win the job? Like, does he win that last spot, at least for now? Because remember, this isn't the final roster. The final roster isn't until the Tuesday before the season starts.
And for example, we know Kari Blasingame is likely to come back. Correct. That's a good example of what you're going to see this week.
And you know what part of me thought about the Ian Wheeler thing? I'll be straight up, that maybe the best thing ultimately for Ian Wheeler is to protect that valuable brain of his and have him go to medical school.
Well, I wonder, I would imagine that he should be able to get some stuff done. I can't imagine that the Bears would, other than making sure that he's rehabbing, like figuring out time where he can be at the facility to rehab after the surgery. I feel like it does open the door for him to get a year of medical school out of the way.
Maybe.
I like how Ryan Poles put it with the red shirt. That's exactly how I was thinking about it.
But if that allows him to get a head start, and maybe sometimes the game is telling you that you're going to be better off, you know, starting out and going and helping other people instead of beating up your body and your brain.
And maybe this gives him some insight too, because he's going to be there's going to be some patient care that he's going to have to deal with, and when he goes through the rehabilitation process. Maybe 20 years from now, we're talking about how that guy took his injury and turned it into making sports medicine better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the hands-on experience that he's getting is absolutely valuable. But either way, it's just nice to get to know somebody better, learn about what makes them tick, want to cheer for that person because of who they are as an individual, and then hope that things get better. And ACL injuries, we know, can be damning, but hopefully for him and technology, it's not as bad as it used to be.
In the moment, you can understand why he's destroyed, because he had opened some eyes and he's pretty close to realizing a dream, and then that dream gets taken away from you, like in the timing of it, and like how close, like you're so close to getting out unscathed in the preseason. And for it to happen like that, it's a really sad thing. But I imagine just from that guy's whole steelo, it makes you think that he gonna be all right. But I could understand if that threw him for a loop, and he had some days where he was just sitting there going, "Why me?"
Oh yeah, you just hate to see people just have situations that are unfortunate that weren't on their own terms. You hate it for most people, you know.
We have Cubs baseball coming up at the top of the hour. If you haven't looked, the Cubs are a winning team. They are 67-66. They remain 9 games behind the Brewers, but they have now a 3.5% chance to make the playoffs. I think that has gone up 0.7% with yesterday's big win. And today they face the thunderous arm of Paul Skeens. And Kyle Hendricks is on the mound for make all your jokes about the differences between the guy throwing 102 and the guy throwing 87. But we'll talk about where they are and what the dugout thinks they're going to be and what the executive suite thinks they're going to be. That's next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
I love these lazy Saturdays.
It's Wednesday, Homer.
Work! And there it is, a swing and a miss, strike 3. And the Cubs win the ball game, and they are over 500 for the first time since May 28. The final, Cubs 9, Pirates 5.
Wait a second. It's been since May 28th when they were actually over 500.
Yes.
It was like June 5th when they were 500.
It's wild, too, because when you look at the wild card standings, I remember when the Cubs got together with the Mets, and the talk had been earlier, well, you know, the Mets are trash, so they'll just trade away Polar Bear, and then the Cubs could just get Polar Bear, and everything would be fine. Then they had a meeting, and now the Mets are right there. Now people are wondering, can they catch Atlanta for that last spot, because they're three out, and then the Cubs are 2.5 behind them. So it's amazing. Like, that's the beauty of how long a season is.
Did you mean to make the pun with the Mets and say amazing? Was that a thing you meant to do?
I did not mean to do that, but I appreciate you acknowledging it.
And then there's the backdrop of what's happening on the South side. Okay, but here's the thing to me is that's why this third NL wildcard spot, and I specifically emphasize the National League aspect of it, is so it's so compelling, but dangerous, but compelling. And then the Cubs, you know, it's like dangled in front of teams to where they're, quote, competitive, if you will, end quote. But then it also doesn't quite define if you can have success. Like, as we've said before, the wild card in the AL West is a lot different from the third wild card in the National League. The wild card coming out of the NL West is going to be a lot different. The record's going to be better. They're playing better. The smoke and mirrors that goes into trying to have a prayer for this hope with this roster, I think, is a much different discussion, especially after what they did yesterday with Drew Smyly placing him on waivers. Do you want that guy to help your team make a playoff run or somebody else? What happened there?
The numbers are so daunting that while the dugout is still playing for something, I'm not sure the front office is. The Cubs are 6 behind the Braves in the loss column.
There it is.
6. They're 3 behind the Mets. But think about this.
You could have had Grimace throughout the first pitch, Cubs. No!
They're 6 out. They're 6 out of that wild card in the loss column. The chances of this are infinitesimal. They're infinitesimal. And I think that's how the front office is looking at it.
Well, okay, that's fine. I also think that the front office is looking at it as a way to shed salary so that they can get under the CBT. So
we've really got to figure out whether or not that was an accident.
Being in the CBT this year?
Correct.
No, I think they looked at it that way. My guess is they said, look, if we're out of it, we can get back under. And they think they're out of it. See, to me, it's kind of binary. I don't think it was an accident. I think they said, okay, well, let's be in it. But they have to make this difficult decision now, because they have to kind of send that message to the teams, like, we don't think you're in it. Because they're working at cross purposes. I think we're seeing it right in front of us.
And listen, before the waiver trade deadline, I think, stopped being a thing, you saw a lot more players like Drew Smyly from playoff hopeful teams get put on waivers. Like, that was a lot more common. But now, when there was a huge group of people asking why he wasn't traded at the deadline, for example, then it's a question I'm going to bring up. Because, again, these are actions that kind of dictate where you think you are as a team.
I'm rooting for the players.
Of course.
I'm rooting for them to because if you look at what Amaya, Swanson, Crow Armstrong have done over the last 30 games, there's clearly improvement that's happening with those players. So that's good. And if they want to keep fighting, great. I'm here for a stretch run of excitement for this Cubs team. But I do think there's a lot of stuff that the front office has done that can be dismissed and argued away, that I feel like they're starting to play with the budget a little bit. And I don't know if we should trust anything that those two guys say about this roster when it comes to talking about the CBT and next year, because it seems pretty clear to me that they want to make sure that they don't get that 30% tax by going over the tax 2 years in a row. And it's why I felt that way about the Leiter move. It's why I feel this way about the Smyly move. I don't think that either one of those moves made your team better.
It didn't. I think there's no question. I think it's obvious what's going on. And I'm rooting for the players, too. But I see what's happening here. And I see that they are, and they're probably right. That the front office is probably right.
They don't have a history of being right.
I don't know, man.
And I think we give them too much credit for being right when they haven't proven that they're right about a lot.
Look at how many players they're paying right now who aren't even on the team.
No. I'm not saying right about...
Look about that money.
I'm not saying right about individual decisions. I'm saying right that...
Be done.
That this team is not... It's just very unlikely this team's making the playoffs. And if they've made that call, you don't need all the proprietary metrics to know that. It's just... This is threading a needle right now. And it would have to be a crazy all-time run. And I think they're saying, look... If it is, everybody wins anyway, and then nobody cares. But what I'm saying is I think it's okay if the dugout feels some resentment.
Of course, because here's the thing. Look how different this team is when Ian Happ, Dansby Swanson, Miguel Amaya, by the way, and Pete Crow Armstrong are producing. It's night and day when the people that you thought were going to produce on this team are doing that. And you don't need everybody hitting it at all times. We don't talk as much about the fact that they traded for Isaac Paredes, and that has not been an ideal result right now. They're 16-8 since July 31st. They didn't get there by happenstance. They got there because the people they trusted and are paying finally started to come through in a way that was expected.
And whoever has been charged with developing Amaya and PCA seems to be doing pretty good work.
And give Craig Counsell credit, too. To give a player 2 days off to go rework a swing, like that is significant. That's a big deal, and I'm glad that he did it.
And Coombe told Mullion Hall last week that he was there in the cage with him as well. Craig Counsell was a part of that.
Like, as if
not needed, just giving the days off, but they're present.
As if we needed another reason to buy Coombe a beer, man. How many are we up to now?
Wait,
$9 million?
Owns the restaurant. So, he should buy all of us beers. I mean, it's his restaurant.
If he had something to do with this or at least can confirm it, like, yeah, Coombe drinks on me.
And they have the magic candle. So we know that the power of Taylor Swift is carrying them to victory.
Anthony Rizzo used Taylor Swift as his walk-up song.
It's
cool.
Cubs and Pirates wrapping up their series from Pittsburgh. Pre-game coverage coming up now. First pitch, 11:35 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. So tomorrow we have all kinds of Thursday fun for you on these very airwaves. Paul Charchian, Mike Florio, Jason Leisure, and we'll know the Bears practice squad. And maybe the Cubs will have vanquished Paul Skeens at that point.
The Bears practice squad show. It doesn't have the same ring as the All-Canada show, guys. I tried.
This is a good effort.
The Bears practice squad show.
Very
really good,
right?
At it.
Not bad.
Good. I haven't heard it enough.
I haven't heard all of it. Heard some of it.
Mantis.
I have heard. Mantis. Haven't heard any of that.
Mantis.
I miss Mantis.
Who do you think you are? I am.
That too.
Cubs baseball headed your way. We will be back tomorrow.
We got to go, guys. It is Cubs baseball.
Yeah.
People are excited. We're here. We're all Cubs fans. We know what we're rooting for. Wrap it up. How do you end this?
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Good to see you.